It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. I have spent the better part of my life in politics, and I don't mean my adult life. I mean from the time that I was a teenager, working towards a few things: electoral reform, more choices and more voices on the ballot, building a vibrant, independent political movement. Unfortunately, it has been a largely frustrating experience, because if you look, especially in states like my home state of New York, the choices have become increasingly restrictive. The options for those of us that are independent voters have become increasingly limited. And I've been thinking a great deal about the presidential campaign, and I've shared with you a lot of my thoughts since this campaign has started. And the person that I have been the most impressed with, particularly since his decision to forgo the party of his entire life, the Democrats, and run as an independent, has been Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And since today is the first day that independent candidates can petition in New York State, and unfortunately, since Mr. Kennedy's former brother-in-law has tripled the requirement for signatures needed to get on the ballot, I feel sort of a moral obligation to do everything that I can to not only vocally support Mr. Kennedy in his independent candidacy, but work towards getting him on the ballot. So starting today, that's what I am going to be doing, and I am proud to wholeheartedly endorse the candidacy for president of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and I'm just thrilled that we have Mr. Kennedy, the candidate himself, jumping on the air with us for a few minutes. Mr. Kennedy, it's great to have you on the program. I'm looking forward to voting for you in November.
Frank, thank you so much. Thank you for your endorsement, and thank you for all the support and for the many times we've gotten to talk with each other. I'm very grateful, and I'm grateful for your commitment to electoral politics and to making our country live up to its highest ideals as the world's exemplary democracy.
A lot of folks have heard me complain about the stringent ballot access laws in states like New York for a long time, and they almost kind of roll their eyes and they think, hey, you know, there are real issues to be concerned about here. There's issues like public safety and the economy and global warming and women's reproductive health and national security. Isn't it a little bit silly for you to spend all this time worrying about how many signatures it takes to get on the ballot? Give me your view of where we stand in terms of ballot access in this country these days. Do you share my concern that it's really a fundamental issue for democracy?
Well, I think democracy is under attack from many, many directions, from both the Republican National Committee and the Democratic National Committee. There's been a series of court cases over the past couple of years that have essentially found that the political parties are essentially private clubs, and they can make rules as restrictive as they want to make sure that they can choose, that the party elites can choose who they want to run and can put their thumbs on the scale, their whole bodies on the scale to make sure nobody else has access. So it's not really optimal for democracy. And as you probably know, I was driven out of the Democratic Party this time around. I wanted to run against Joe Biden in the Democratic Party, but they closed down the primaries. They changed the rules. They made it so that they adopted a rule that made it that any candidate who stepped into New Hampshire, which I had already done, that all of their votes would count for President Biden. And then they just shut down primaries. They said, we're not having an election. Florida was taken off, et cetera. So I don't think that's good optics for us around the globe. I do sympathize with people who say, look, we have existential crises now. We have, the national debt is $34 trillion. We have environmental issues. We have this toxic polarization. We have inflation. And 57% of Americans can't put their hands on $1,000 if they have an emergency. And those are really, those are existential issues for us. And there are many, many others: the chronic disease epidemic, the capture of our government by corporate power, etc. cetera. So, but, you know, for me, I am determined to address those issues. I don't think President Biden or President Trump can. I think they're part of the problem. I think they, you know, they're very different in terms of their dispositions, their approach to issues, their personalities. But the issues they actually disagree on is a very narrow Overton window. It's, you know, abortion, it's guns, it's the border, it's transsexual rights. And, you know, these are important issues, but they're not the existential issues that are really threatening now to destroy our kind of government on our country. We are now paying more for the interest on the debt than our military budget. Within 5 years, 50 cents out of every dollar that we collect in taxes is going to go to the debt. That's existential. President Biden and President Trump can't address it because they caused the problem. President Trump ran up a bigger debt, $8 trillion, than all the presidents in American history combined before him for 283 years of our government. And then President Biden is now on his way to even beating that. So neither of these ex-presidents are going to be able to address the debt. Neither of them can address the polarization because they're part of it. They're running on campaigns of fear. They're not going to address the issue of chronic disease. When my uncle was president, 6% of Americans had chronic disease. Today, 60% do. And it's a budget cost to us of $4.3 trillion a year. It's almost five times our military budget. The cost of treating chronic disease, the cost of diabetes alone is equal to our military budget. And this is all new. And nobody, you know, we have two presidents who've been in office and never talked about these issues. The issues of, you know, our food supply, that there's 1,000 ingredients in our food that are illegal in Europe. Our soils are being depleted. All of these are critical issues that neither President Trump or President Biden are going to address. And they're not going to be addressed by the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, because those parties are owned by the pharmaceutical industry, the big food processors, by BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, which own the military contractors and keep us addicted to these forever wars. And so we do need another voice to give a different vision of what America is supposed to look like.
Now, even obviously,
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you've been going through this ballot access process and seeing how difficult it is in some states and the dirty tricks, the games that they play to keep you off the ballot in certain states. There was one entity that does have ballot access in a whole bunch of states, and there was speculation that you might be running for office or seeking to run for office as their nominee. I'm talking about the Libertarian Party. Over the weekend, ABC News came out with a story that indicated that you're no longer, if you ever were, interested in running with the Libertarian Party. You're going to go the straight independent route. We may have some Libertarian folks listening right now. I'm just wondering if you could explain that decision. Why forego the Libertarians?
You know, I'm very aligned on many issues, of Libertarian issues. I have been for my whole life. My approach to the environment has been a free market approach. I believe in liberty. I believe in protecting the Constitution and winding down the war machine. All of these are important issues to Libertarians. So I felt aligned with them, and they do have ballot access in most states, so that would have been an easier path for us. But we are going to be able to get ballot access without the Libertarian Party, and the process of getting the Libertarian nomination was, let me put it this way, very complicated. Mm-hmm. And very uncertain. And it was a level of uncertainty and risk that we all felt that we couldn't afford to take. And we felt like Americans really want somebody who's not attached to any party. And so we're going to get ballot access in every state. The hardest state in the country is New York State. Mm-hmm. And it opens on tomorrow, Tuesday. And we have a team that we're going to gather approximately 2,000 signatures a day. We're the reason New York is tough, Frank, is because, as you said, my former brother-in-law, Andrew Cuomo, tried to make it almost impossible for independents to run in this state. And now they, I think they tripled the number of signatures that we need. So we need 45,000 signatures.
Minimum.
And we only, the other part of the bad, hard thing about New York is you only have 45 days to get all those signatures. So you need 1,000 signatures a day for 45 days. And because the DNC and RNC are both going to come after us with hammer and tongs, we need a buffer. We try to get a 100% buffer. So we're going to try for at least 76,000 signatures. But we're hoping to get 90,000 in 45 days. We've got our teams on the street, and you know, I encourage people to go to our website, kennedy24.com/new-New York. So that's kennedy24.com/new-York.
I'm going to be out there getting signatures.
On that page, you will see events that are signature gathering events that are going to be in your neighborhood over the next 2 months, over the next 6 weeks. And you can go down, and it's very, very quick. But you actually have to go and do it in person. But we're going to be doing it all over the state, in every neighborhood in the state. We're going to have events every day.
It's very exciting, and it's a great opportunity for New Yorkers who may want to meet you. Again, the website is kennedy24.com/new-York, and you'll also see a calendar of all the upcoming events in New York, including one today in Brooklyn, also some events in Manhattan coming up later this week, and then there's going to be petition signature parties in Rochester, out on Long Island, and everywhere. But if you're interested in helping collect signatures, as I will be, or just signing the petition, as you heard, between now and May 28th, we're going to need hopefully 90,000 or more signatures, so that there's a good buffer, so that even if they challenge them, and by the way, this applies to people that may not even be sure who they want to vote for yet. You're not obliging yourself, if you're a voter, to vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. All you're doing is giving him a spot on the ballot and really making a statement to the powers that be that have tried to make this state a state that is limited in terms of voter choice, that you're not going to stand for that. So even if you're a Biden supporter or a Trump supporter, if you believe in fair elections, consider signing the petition. Mr. Kennedy, I know you're busy. I know you're on the road. You're going to be traveling, and hopefully I'll see you, you know, over the course of the next 6 weeks a great deal. A couple of quick issues I want to ask you about since I have you on the phone. Obviously, the whole world's focused on what's going on in the Middle East in the aftermath of this Iranian attack on Israel over the weekend. A lot of people concerned that there may be some Israeli retaliation towards Iran now. How do you see the situation between Israel and Iran at the moment, and what role do you see the United States playing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, but I've been a strong supporter of Israel and the need for Israel to eradicate Hamas. I just don't see that there's any other choice after October 7th and after 16 years of attacks on 2,000 missiles a year fired onto civilian populations by Hamas from Gaza. Hamas is a big enemy to the Palestinian people, as is the Israeli people, and Hamas has announced that it will not negotiate with Israel, that it considers any negotiation with Israel a sin against Islam, and that it's only will be satisfied with the annihilation of Israel and the extermination of the Jewish people, not only in Israel, but worldwide. I don't see, Israel has had 5 ceasefires with Hamas, and each one Hamas has used to rearm, to regroup, to hoist the banner, and to attack Israel again. So I don't see that Israel has any choice. If the world has supported Israel and retaliated against Hamas, had prosecuted Isbahaniya and the other leaders of Hamas where they live in Doha, in Qatar or Ankara, Turkey, that it would be a different story. But unfortunately, the world isolated Israel and left Israel with no choice except for a military solution. I very much hope that whatever the action against Iran is, that it's measured and that it does not escalate. I think Nobody wants a regional war. I do not believe that Iran wants a regional war. And the United States doesn't, the rest of the world doesn't. It could get it out of control. We could end up in World War III. No, I think, you know, Israel ought to focus on Hamas. And I'm hoping that any actions against Iran are measured as thoughtful as not calculated to escalate this crisis. We're all praying for that. We pray for the Israeli people and the Palestinian people and people all over that region.
Yeah, that's something I don't think anybody can disagree with, no matter where they come down. Talking with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., if you're interested in learning more about his candidacy, you can go to the website Kennedy24.com. Particularly if you're a New Yorker, you can go to Kennedy24.com/new-York and find out how you can sign the petition. Quickly, sir, there was a lot of news made towards the end of last week about Congress's decision to reauthorize Section 702 of the FISA Act. Some people are raising concerns that this is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. If you are elected, this will expire on your watch while you're elected. What's your take on what Congress did with respect to FISA?
It's wrong. We should not renew FISA. It is an assault on the, as you say, the Fourth Amendment, but all the entire Constitution, including the First Amendment. And, you know, we're moving into an era of AI, of constant surveillance, of facial recognition systems, of low-altitude satellites, of GPS, of Siri, and Alexa listening to your conversations all day long, your Apple Watch listening to your conversation. There's all these mechanisms by which corporations harvest our data for free, but those same machines and mechanisms can be used for the government to surveil us and ultimately control us. And that is anti-American. And we're moving into the AI era now, where the government will have the power to actually twist perception, twist reality, in order to control human behavior. And it's very frightening. As Elon Musk said, the AI is going to first steal our jobs, and then it's going to kill us if we don't make sure to protect ourselves against it. And, you know, it's not an easy issue. We need somebody in the White House who's very thoughtful about it. We don't want to overregulate AI and drive it into other countries. We want to make sure the hub remains here in the United States, but that people's constitutional rights are protected, that we have agreements with our adversaries, even all over the world, with Iran, with China, with Russia, to make sure that everybody is focused on preserving humanity and human rights. And we ought to be raising the barriers of our Constitution and not eroding them or subverting them. We ought to make sure that our constitutional rights are ironclad, because we're moving into a very, very dangerous part of American history right now. And it's not time to make it legal for the government or make it easier for the government to surveil us. We need to make it harder, and we need to make every American know about their rights and have those rights be fortified and not subverted.
If I were to guess, I would say about 60% of this audience probably voted for President Trump in 2020. I would venture to guess about 30% probably voted for President Biden. And then the other 10% either didn't vote, or they maybe voted for a third party candidate or wrote in someone because they don't like either candidate. Obviously, that 10% is ripe to be persuaded by you. But there's a lot of cynicism, particularly in a place like New York. You know that obviously your father was the senator here. There's a lot of cynicism about you and your candidacy from both the left and the right. A lot of folks on the right believe that you're part of some sort of plot to elect President Biden. They point to your history and your family's history with the Democratic Party. A lot of folks on the left believe you're part of some sort of a plot to elect Donald Trump. Wondering what you can say, if anything, to reassure folks that you're not part of some strategic operation to either help Biden or Trump win the election.
That would be... I'm you know, my purpose is to spoil the election for both President Biden and President Trump. As I said a moment ago, Frank, I think both of those men are very different in their dispositions and their personalities, but they're very, very similar. The issues that they disagree on are, you know, it's a very narrow band of issues. There are all these culture war issues that are not really... they're important. The border is important. They disagree on that. They disagree on abortion, on guns, on gay rights, on trans rights. These are all important issues, but it's a very narrow range. And it's the issues that are really existential to our country. Neither President Trump or President Biden has any capacity to deal with. And that's why I'm running. They're not going to solve the $34 trillion deficit. They're not going to solve the chronic disease epidemic. They're not going to unravel. Neither of them are capable of unraveling the war machine. Both of them were involved in shutting down every business in this country during COVID and shifting $4 trillion north to this new oligarchy of billionaires. They created a billionaire a day for 500 days during COVID, and they shut down 3.3 million businesses. Wow. You know, President Trump came in and said, I'm a businessman. I'm going to run America, the government, like a business. And then he gave the keys to Anthony Fauci to shut down every business in our country. And, you know, we need a president who can stand up to bureaucrats, who can stand up to the war machine, who can end this toxic division. And neither President Trump or President Biden can, because they're both part of it. They're both telling us to hate on the other side. And we need another approach. And, no, we need somebody who can unravel the corrupt merger of state and corporate power. And both of them are part of it. They both had 4 years each to solve these problems. They both made them worse during their 4 years. If you want more of the same, you should vote for one of them. If you want a genuine change, you should vote for RFK. Frank, thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it. I'm going to look forward to signing the petition today, to carrying petitions between now and May 28th. If people are interested, go to Kennedy24.com/new-York. Mr. Kennedy, I'll have to save asking your review of the Curb finale for the next time we chat. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much.
If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you're welcome to give me a call, 1-800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.